Spiritual Success Stories from TATFoundation.org. What is spiritual success? What does it mean for the spiritual search to come to a successful end? In this program, we will hear from four people who have made the trip and returned to talk about it, who have sought the absolute truth and found it. They come from different backgrounds and lived very different lives, but one thing they have in common is they started as seekers. Art Tickner was a middle-aged man who seemed to be living the good life, but something was off.
I would go through these frustrating periods, maybe a couple times a year, where I would be talking to myself about how I've got everything that should make me happy, and yet there's something missing.
Sean Nevins was in college and drifting when he began questioning the life he was living. That questioning awakened something that turned Sean into a seeker.
The seeker has to seek because they connected with what they truly want.
Anima Pundir began meditation as a teenager and says what she truly wanted was an end to her suffering.
I was just so, no matter what I did, what I got, I was just, plain miserable.
As a young man, Mike Gegenheimer studied engineering and was determined to use his mind to unravel the mysteries of life when he realized he was looking in the wrong direction.
I thought the answers were out there, and this actually got me turned around looking at the answers are inside.
In addition to seeking, they also share a connection to TAT Foundation founder Richard Rose. Art Tickner, Sean Nevins, and Mike Gegenheimer worked closely with Rose at different points in their spiritual search. While Anima Pundir encountered the TAT community and Richard Rose's teachings later in her search. In this program, these four very different people who achieved spiritual success talk about their path, the tools and tactics they used, and the truth they found. Anima Pundir was born in India in a household where spiritual practices were part of daily life, but she says her early introduction to meditation did not bring her happiness, so she began the path of inquiry, questioning everything.
But that self-inquiry starts not from question who am I or trying to know the knower. It starts from, at least for me, from inquiry into the world, into the universe, into this external life that we live. What is life? And one of my favorite answers that I found was life is suffering. You're born, you suffer, and then you die.
Sean Nevin says when he started on looking forward where his life was heading, it raised questions that had no answers.
You can start to see that you're really not going to be here forever. And you can start to really feel that question of, well, what will remain of me when I exit the stage? One of my friends used to talk about how, like when your grandparents pass away and then your parents pass away, he would say, well, I just moved up a step in line. And that's kind of what happens in life, right? We move forward a step in line and then eventually it's our time to pass away. And what does that mean?
Art Tickner had relied on mathematics and computer science to solve problems. But he found himself asking questions that were pointing to something beyond.
We're in a dimension where nothing can be known for sure. And we all are looking for certainty. It's miserable being stuck. What we believe is between birth and death. And not, if we're honest with ourselves, we don't have a clue what's going to happen when we die. And so to me, spirituality could be used to point to something beyond the mind.
And Art says the search for reality beyond the mind pointed him in a clear direction.
First, know thyself. And that's actually the direction. If you want to know anything for sure, you can't know anything for sure until you know the knower. So the direction is to know yourself. And I can testify that when that happens, there won't be any problems. It will solve all problems.
Sean Nevin says you start by asking some basic questions.
What are my priorities in life? What at the end of the day is going to bring me the most satisfaction? And then the spiritual path, we're talking about potentially eternal satisfaction or eternal completeness, not transient.
Art Tickner says the goal is to return home, and that requires the discovery of our true nature, which Richard Rose called the path of self-definition.
I look up the word define, and it's described in a lot of dictionaries, something along these lines, describing exactly the nature, scope, or meaning of. And a second indicator is marking the boundary or limits of. And basically, if we're going to know the self, that's what we're talking about. We're looking for exactly what our nature, scope, or meaning is.
Sean says, you approach truth by backing away from false beliefs and errors, leading to a change of being.
What Rose was trying to teach is that you become the truth. And that process of becoming a truth is one of becoming more and more honest about what I actually see, what do I actually know versus believe.
Art says the problem is that we believe things about ourselves that are not true, and the spiritual path involves seeing into those most basic assumptions.
I'm the thinker, I'm the decision maker. All these beliefs are being used by the mind in its operations. And to me, the mind's operations are designed for survival. So those are also used by the mental machinery, but they can be challenged.
Richard Rose said that you need three things to find the truth. First, you need to allow your initial curiosity to develop into an intense desire for the truth. Art says you can't settle for less.
If you're seeking truth, seeking reality, seeking to know the truth of what you are, don't set your sights too low, like, oh, I'd like to be a little smarter, I'd like to understand a little better. No.
Second, Rose said you need energy. And Mike Gegenheimer says that means turning away from distractions and applying that energy to your search.
What do you do with that energy? Well, so that's what the energy you use for reflection, or to hold your attention in meditation a little longer, to read more, to think more, the productive thinking about your psychology. So that energy gets put to good use.
And Rose said the third essential is commitment. He said you make a simple pledge to yourself and any God who might be listening. Anima Pundir says when she made her commitment, things begin to happen in her spiritual life.
Once you make a commitment, there is an inner, you know, your daily life starts to manifest in support of that commitment.
Art Tickner says he had made commitments before, but this was different.
I'd made like New Year's commitments before, but they're like trying to twist your arm to do something you don't want, you know. This was, I saw very clearly what I really wanted more than anything in life. And I didn't see that I was kidding myself about it. I didn't see any holdouts. And so to me, that made the most solid commitment I've ever had. And I borrowed the words from Rose that I thought described that. That's to become the truth at any cost.
One of the difficulties with the path of self-inquiry is that you begin to see yourself in action. And Mike Gegenheimer says it's tempting to avoid facing difficult aspects of your life, but he says you need to go there.
I don't think you can shortcut the business of understanding your mind. There's so many things. Our mind is so egocentric. We're so wired and programmed to be egocentric, to seek affirmation. And a lot of us have these emotional, psychological kinks about us that cloud our ability to see clearly.
When you've investigated your mind enough, you understand, you have some good understanding of the nature of how it functions.
And Anima Pundir says that requires a willingness to see what is and to question what you see.
No matter what I did, I always started to, you know, I started to look back at my own motives. That's how you get behind your mechanicalness, you know. Why do I really do that? And I always found some very, very selfish reason behind all my good you know, selfless acts as well.
Richard Rose advised seekers to work together to support their efforts in a group inquiry setting, which he called confrontation. Sean says confrontation helped him because other seekers asked him questions that he couldn't or wouldn't ask himself.
And if it wasn't for other people asking me such questions, I wouldn't have developed into a self-aware and self-questioning person. So yeah, things like, on a practical level, things like group inquiry / confrontation, like you see in TAP, groups of people getting together and sharing their thoughts and beliefs, and then being open to other people asking them questions about those thoughts and beliefs. That is a very practical way to begin to develop some perspective on ourselves.
Art says he had a breakthrough after attending a group meeting where they talked about watching thoughts.
People would talk about watching their thoughts. And so I'd heard that term, but it didn't really mean anything to me. And one night when I was leaving, I found myself stopped outside the door watching my mind. And the words that came to me were, I'm actually watching thoughts as they're happening. I heard that was possible, but I didn't know it was. And so those are the kinds of things that accidentally happen from working with other people.
In addition to confrontation meetings, Richard Rose also advised like-minded seekers to sit in rapport groups. Sean says they sit quietly with eyes open and simply be present and share that sense of presence.
When you have a moment of honesty and it's with another person, and you both feel the profundity and the mystery of this life that we live, and that we're, you know, the two of us, the three of us are here in this moment. And there's just this feeling that there's something so real and we're so close to it. It transcends those boundaries that we normally have.
The spiritual search ends when you become the truth by backing away from untruth. But Sean says that path begins where you are right now.
Part of backing away from untruth occurs at the level of everyday life, meaning here's little stories that I'm telling myself. Here's little lies that I'm living. Let me get honest about that. And then turns towards the interior world of the view is not the viewer, which I found to be an incredibly useful tool for backing away from untruth. The view is not the viewer.
He says, as you see your mind at work, patterns of thoughts, urges, and desires are revealed, and you begin to make discoveries.
Impulses or urges that come up in that way. They rise again and they rise again. And it's a different flavor from the urge to have dessert, right? That's something that can be like really sharp and really, it feels like it comes up in the body. Almost feels like an invader, that kind of just sharp wanting. And this is more of a quiet arising of, and there's a curiosity around this desire. What is this about? There's an interest in it.
Art Tickner.
The whole idea basically of retreating from untruth is we observe the mind and we start seeing more and more of the mind's operations. And that challenges beliefs we have about ourselves.
And that points to our most basic belief that lies at the heart of the spiritual quest.
What happens, the transition from being hypnotized by the mind and finding yourself back home, the transition requires the belief that we are an individual something. That has to get challenged and has to, to me, that's the keystone and the arch of faulty beliefs that keep us hypnotized into the mind dimension. And so something has to challenge that.
Mike Giggenheimer says the challenge to false beliefs comes from the questioning from the inquiry process itself and our willingness to back away from what we see as untrue.
When you see something about yourself that you don't really particularly like, you see a behavior, you see the reason for the behavior, and, you know, maybe you're not even laying it at the feet of nature at that point. You're just like, you know, what a jerk I am for having said this, or why did I do this, or why did I think this, or why do I believe this, you know, after maybe you have a disagreement with someone. And you start thinking about your reasons, and this is all like basic work that goes on trying to clarify your mind and ultimately improve your intuition.
But he says as inquiry deepens and leads to greater awareness, expect it to generate tension.
Anyone who's on a spiritual path and they take to heart the idea of analyzing their mind, they take to heart the idea of conservation of energy and redirecting that energy, and they begin to practice this business of retreating from untruth in their own selves, they're swimming upstream compared to the rest of life. And, you know, the countervailing side of that effort is the mind's propensity to want to go grab a hold of things, the body's desire to possess things, the egos associated with life, the desires of life, the fears of life. And when you start analyzing that, I think there's a very natural tension that occurs, because it's you're setting an opposite direction to what the mind is used to.
That mental resistance can become an obstacle that can lead the seeker to question their entire spiritual effort. Art says as he analyzed his behaviors, his motivations to seek were also challenged.
I got to a certain point in my search where it dawned on me one day that what I was looking for was not going to do anything for what I believe myself to be. It wasn't going to make me perfect. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't going to solve all the deficiencies of my personality.
No.
So, and then after that, I think the only reason I kept seeking, since I didn't have that incentive, the only reason I kept seeking was just the momentum that had built up.
Sean says at times he hit a wall on his path, a dry patch when he could not connect with his motivation, and the best he could do was to tread water, as he put it.
It feels a million miles away, and all that I know is that I'm not happy right now, and nothing is going the way I want to be going, and I'm never going to be able to do what I hope to do, right? That's kind of my classic pit of despair. Probably one of the most useful tools for that is to know that it too shall pass.
He says when you reach a point like that, prayer is a viable option. He defines prayer like this:
sincere expression of the desire for help and an admission of our powerlessness. That as well is tied in with prayer. And in moments, we can be very open and very honest and put forth something to the universe. And it does seem like there is help out there. I don't know what it is. It's just ourselves, our higher selves that we connect with. But it does seem like there's help available.
Eventually, their spiritual inquiry led Art, Shauna, Anima, and Mike deeper inside their minds, a process called going within. Art Tickner says he struggled with that.
That became my koan for 25 years. How do you go within? So I had also become familiar with Douglas Harding the last couple of years before my breakthrough. And I started doing his experiments, and he did some of his experiments with me. And it made great sense to me that you have to try to look back at what you're looking out from. Rose used to talk about it as you have to go back through the projector to retraverse the ray of creation to get home, to get to find the truth of what you really are.
Mike Gegenheimer says looking within can be frustrating if you are expecting to find something that you recognize.
Most of the time you ask people when they look inside, what do they see? They go, oh, nothing. Well, that may be true. There may be nothing there until you realize that there's something looking out. But it's not something the mind grasps.
Further, Sean Nevin says looking within can lead to the discovery that the whole observation process is a mental projection or construct.
What we are viewing is a construct, but also the viewer is a construct. The whole mechanism from what's in front to what's viewing to what we believe is behind, it's all a construct from beginning to end. And that is, you know, that's potentially what can be revealed if we're honest.
Mind is the bridge that you need to cross. Now, what does that mean?
And Anima says crossing that bridge is possible if you are willing to be honest about what you see.
The mind is trying to take itself on a trip it can't make.
Mike Gegenheimer says when he looked within his mind, kept trying to produce an answer.
Many of us, as I did, believe the mind is going to figure this out. We, whoever we think we are, we're going to figure this out. This is our tool. We're going to get it.
But he says intense inquiry can turn the MND mind in on itself.
You know, you analyze your mind, you see what's not true, you leave you about it. And okay, so you get yourself free of those reactions, that intense self psychoanalysis. And then at some point, you're looking at your thoughts, and eventually as you examine your thoughts, you have the opportunity to either see between them or the mind comes to a stop.
Sean says as you go within, you make discoveries that fuel the process and give you momentum.
Like, oh, I get that. I get it. Like, I can observe this thought form coming into my mind, and it made so much common sense. Like, well, if I can see it, then it's not me. So how, you know, what the heck? Well, let me start looking at all this noise in my head and trying to figure out if those things are not me. Well, then what is me? It's just, you know, it's fascinating. It really caught my curiosity, and that gave it power and usefulness for my path.
Mike says the looking and the questioning can lead to unexpected breakthroughs if you stay focused.
But if there's something that's like really captivates your attention and becomes one of those things you really want to work because you're inspired to do it, your intuition's telling you something, you can when you think about that happening to yourself, you get a sense of what that tension is. It's like, wow, you know, I'd really like, what the hell does this mean? You know? And so that kind of tension is also generates an awareness. Sometimes it generates enough tension that the answer to what that quote was that inspired you pops out. And it might pop out at a time when you're not even thinking about it.
Sean Nevin says Richard Rose talked about enlightenment as the final resolution of that sustained tension.
Tension between the opposites, the contradictions. And he really felt like enlightenment was essentially an extreme tension. And he talks, I think in the Energy Transmutation book, he talks about something along the lines of enlightenment being the resolution of the tension between life and death, right? Enlightenment is not life, it's not death, it is something other than.
Sean Nevins was alone when his spiritual search came to an end. For months, he had been wrestling with being aware of being aware.
There would be, I would be resting in awareness, and then it would be as if suddenly another awareness started arising, and it noticed that I was resting in awareness. And that conundrum just really drew me in and made me question, like, well, okay, so there's awareness, there's this spaciousness. Where is that? What's the source of that? Where is that arising from somewhere? Is there something behind that? Because I can see it. And Rose said the view is not the viewer. So what's the ultimate viewer behind all of this stuff? And that is, that to me is really driving at, I want to know the source of awareness.
He says he was reading Franklin Merrill Wolfe's induction paper when a mental and physical struggle began that ended with the final answer. Sean later wrote, "I was no more and it was all. It was not an experience, it was what is real, and what is real is not anything of this world or anything of the mind. Reality is. There was nothing, but yet everything." Sean says all of the contradictions and paradoxes he encountered along the path as a seeker were finally resolved.
We can come close to grasping this idea of absolute. What the heck does absolute mean? What the heck does non-duality mean? Well, can we conceive of a thing that contains, that has no other thing? Can we conceive of all the paradoxes that the Zen teachers point to and that Rose pointed to? You know, everything and nothing. Right? Well, you're talking about gratitude and love and, you know, what, thankfulness and all of this feeling that in some way is all the same feeling. Well, yes, it is in some way. What we are, yes, contains all of that in some undifferentiated form. And from that emerges all of this amazing nuance and differentiation and words, and, you know, all of these degrees of manifestation emerge from that. And we are trying to march back through all of that differentiation and see if there is some source. And therefore, following any of those feelings, it to me, it does. All the degree of differentiation begins to fade as we approach truth.
Mike Gegenheimer's spiritual search ended at a Tat retreat weekend. He says at times during his decades of seeking, he had experienced moments of a special feeling arising during group rapport sittings. He says his mind had always resisted that feeling, but on this occasion he entered the session with a new conviction.
If that feeling arises, I'll trust it absolutely. So what it was different? It wasn't until the very end of the sitting that that feeling arose, even though it was pretty, it was an intense sitting. And that feeling arose. And I think simply because of that intent, I followed the feeling absolutely. I let go. And I saw it as this thing unfolded. I saw that the mind had thought it was, there still was this little belief back there, the mind was going to figure this out. But I abandoned it. I absolutely abandoned it in that moment.
But he doesn't want to give the impression that he made a final effort that produced a result.
People talk about unclenching a fist. And that made sense after the fact, because I let go of belief that the mind was going to solve anything. So it's a little bit like that unclenching idea, but it's certainly not anything that I did. I think that was taken from me.
Mike Gegenheimer says, after enlightenment, the words of Richard Rose came back to him in a new light.
And he commented that the Buddha nature, to me, is nothing more than the vein of the absolute that's in every human being. But what will it take for it to be conscious, for the person to be conscious of it? What it amounts to, basically, I maintain, is that everybody is unconscious. And when a person realizes the Buddha nature, then the small S self and the large S self are both conscious of each other for the first time.
Anima Pundir says her spiritual search came to an end after the years of seeking stopped. She says the drive that kept her going to confrontation meetings and doing intense psychological inquiry peaked, and she just couldn't push anymore.
The problem wasn't in the relationships with my emotions, with feelings, with thoughts, with thinking. The problem lied in my belief that I am a separate individual. You know, I'm a separate identity. The problem lied with the identity, you know, ignorance of who I was. You know, all the problems, all my complaints arose from that.
She says at the time she felt her personality fading away and with it the desire for enlightenment. Anima says she wanted to let it all go, but she couldn't.
All my interest in my own self, interest in, you know, enlightenment of the self also. I realized that the one who wants enlightenment, who's seeking, is also ego, right? You can't kill that ego throughout, you know. I wanted to surrender ego, but who's this surrendering? Who's this wanting to surrender ego?
Anima says while her body-mind continued to move efficiently through life on its own, it felt like there was no one in the driver's seat.
In the end, my state of mind was almost like, you know, I'm at a train station just waiting. And you know how hard it is to wait for the train, which you don't know at what time will come, or wait for the bus, which you don't know if it'll come or not, to show up. And you can't do anything but, you know, just sit there and wait. So at the end, it felt like that I was in that mental inner state of just waiting.
Anima says the waiting ended one morning when a thought came with a question. She thought, I wonder what God feels like. And in that moment, she says her body and mind were locked in a struggle that ended when she realized her true nature as absolute non-individualized awareness, and all issues were resolved.
You know, all your doubts, regrets, fears, anxieties, questions, everything that you hope to find, you just find it when you find your true self.
I am that, and nothing in me can ever die. I found immortality, and I found who I was, and I found who you are.
Art Tickner says his spiritual search ended on the final day of an isolation retreat at a cabin in the woods. He says the years of spiritual practice recommended by Richard Rose and Douglas Harding led him to a process of direct observation of the mind.
To me, it was like a muscle that was being developed, to be able to consciously watch the mind and then to consciously turn the inner head away from the thought stream that you were observing if it didn't seem to be relevant to what you're looking for.
He says this time a new insight came about the act of watching and the relationship between thoughts and awareness.
What I found in the final analysis is that thought didn't stop, but it moved like into peripheral vision. So it really, what I heard the mind say to itself was, that's amazing. It's not interfering with direct observation. So, but anyway, so I would repeat what Rose had recommended is to remind myself I'd prefer no thought rather than irrelevant rambling thought.
Art says it was then that he became what he was looking for.
I was conscious of consciousness. And then, but it wasn't providing a challenge to this belief in individuality. And that occurred in the final hours of a final solitary retreat I did. When I was doing the Harding exercise and looking back at what I look out from, I'd done that maybe, I don't know, 500, 1,000 times. It only takes a moment, you know, just an instantaneous look. And I never saw anything, which is exactly what Harding described. And this time, though, I saw something. And what I saw was awareness. And so when you do find yourself back home, and you become what you've always been and always will be.
And with that, Art says at last he found the certainty he was seeking.
You'll never know anything absolutely for sure in the mind dimension. Even once you know beyond a doubt what you truly are, your essence is absolute being. It knows itself, and that's what you can know for sure.
Seekers who became finders. Some spiritual teachers scoff at that whole notion. They say, in reality, there is no seeker, there is no path, and nothing to do. Sean Nevins says yes and no.
The back of the book answer, right? There is no progress, there is no one to make progress, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff that we hear. On the one hand, it's true. And on the other hand, there is some value in having at least a sketch of a roadmap so that we have some sense another person perhaps has been down this route before and has left some breadcrumbs that give us a little hope and maybe a little inspiration that this is not all just foolishness.
Art Tickner agrees and says it is possible for seekers and finders to connect at some level. And there is value in that.
The only thing that somebody who has possibly been there and done that and found that is that you could open up somebody else's intuition to the possibility of finding complete, utter, eternal satisfaction.
And Mike Gegenheimer says his path from seeker to finder began when he connected with Richard Rose and the spiritual community that Rose created.
I consider my own life to be a testament to the validity of Rose's teachings, not only because I've found through them a path to this, but also that they've worked to create a matrix cooperation among the friends in the TAT Foundation, which helped me and have helped others in the individual efforts to sustain their search for realization.
Sean gives Richard Rose the last word in a short poem that expresses that which cannot be expressed. Life after enlightenment.
The Dawn Breaks by Richard Rose. The dawn breaks because another day and night have died, but the sky was there through all. The butterfly floats a moment, and then his dalliance is only an eternal picture. The breast flows with milk and is dry forever. And the lullaby of life and the ear that hear it weaken and cease. Nothing is happening. Nothing is done. The sun rises in glory, and the lover stretches his shoulders with ambition. The sunset is forever, and the lover drinks of beauty, and beauty drinks of the lover, and life loses its pride in death. But nothing is happening, nothing is done. The eye and the urge our beauty in life. The owner is disenfranchised. The holder lets go of his grasp, and everything becomes his domain. God is in his thought, and his thought lives only in his God. Nothing is judged. Nothing is known. Nothing is meaningful. everything is perfect.
Spiritual success stories from tatfoundation.org. Explore more audio and video messages from Art Tickner, Sean Nevins, Anima Pundier, Michael Giegenheimer, and Richard Rose by going to our website, tatfoundation.org, and clicking on the menu. Art, Sean, Anima, and Mike are frequent contributors to the free monthly TAT Forum newsletter and often take part in live online and in-person spiritual retreats. For more information, go to tatfoundation.org and click on events. And to get answers to questions about your spiritual journey, go to tatfoundation.org and click on the contact button. Spiritual Success Stories from tatfoundation.org is produced by the Tat Foundation, all rights reserved.